Welcome back to Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you for joining us today. Last week, you heard from Ernest Green, an MSU alumnus and one of the Little Rock Nine. Those were the students who faced violent protests and Arkansas National Guard soldiers when they tried to integrate Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1957. After a tense senior year, Ernest became the first African-American to graduate Central High. And he told us that he accepted his diploma with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. sitting next to his parents in the crowd. The 17-year-old then moved to New York City and spent his summer in jazz clubs listening to the likes of Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk. Today we have the second part of our interview with Ernest Green. We pick up the conversation with his arrival at Michigan State University and learn about the anonymous donor who funded his degree.
And the issue about coming here, I came here because I received a scholarship to Michigan State, and for a long time it was from an anonymous donor. I didn't know who the benefactor was, and I came back, I think it was 94, I gave the commencement address, and Peter McPherson was president at that time, and my friend Joel Ferguson was chairman of the board, and they indicated to me that they had been going through some of Dr. Hanna's papers and found that he was underwriting my scholarship as an undergraduate student here. And I chaired the campus NAACP here. We used to picket Dr. Hanna's house many times, so I gathered he was probably looking out his window wondering what he had done having this kid stir up trouble. But
it took 35 or so years before you knew that John Hanna
absolutely
made it possible. How about that? Did you ever meet President Hanna?
Sure. Well, John Hanna was the time I was here from the from 58 to when I finished grad school at 64. He was all over the campus. He was someone you could walk up to and have a conversation about issues of the day.
Really accessible then.
Very accessible. He was the educator and the politician that he made himself accessible to students. And then he was obviously well-liked, well-loved, and imprint of John Hanna's all over this university, almost every building that's up. He either helped plan it or he helped build it, one or the other.
How did you feel the moment you found out that he was directly responsible for your attending here?
Well, it made me really feel a connection to the university. I mean, I grew up in an era in which you pretty much went to the college that accepted you. Today, at least my children, they went for visits. They slept in the dorm. They taste the food. They kick the tires. And that was not a process that we utilized when I was coming along. So to have John Hanna as the underwriter of my scholarship reinforced for me that I really did make the right choice and going to the right school, and that I felt very proud about that.
But of all the people, this was somebody you ended up not just becoming acquainted with and talking with, but you protested.
We were there during the period of Vietnam and the height of the Civil Rights Movement. But again, John Hanna knew his students, and I think he knew that this was an atmosphere in which he had to be willing to listen to different points of view, and he was flexible on that.
And after you graduated, you went to work for the A. Philip Randolph Institute, which is an African-American labor advocacy organization. After that, Assistant Secretary of Labor under President Carter. How did the experiences you had as a young person shape the direction of your career in public service?
Well, the AFIL Brandoff experience was priceless. I began working with them a year after the March on Washington in 1964, and worked directly with A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin. And that experience is one that really helped give me a view and vision of the what's possible to change in this society. The other thing is that the job training experience, that the work that I did with the A. Philip Randolph Institute was also work that was being done by the Labor and Industrial Relations unit here at Michigan State, looking at discrimination in the skilled trades area, expanding training and anti-discrimination activity in the building trades. All of that was an area that was being studied by the university here. And I really thought that I was able to see the work that I had done here at Michigan State, being able to apply it with the Randolph Institute, and then being selected by President Carter and Ray Marshall to go from the private sector into the public sector as an Assistant Secretary of Labor.
Now today, decades after the struggle to integrate public schools, after Brown versus Board of Education, segregation in America's schools remains pretty widespread. A ProPublica investigative series 2 years ago found that since 1993, there's been a significant increase in the number of black students attending schools where 90% or more of the school population are already minority students, especially in the southern states. How does it feel to see the progress that was made during your childhood be rolled back?
Well, I take the position that we still are a very segregated society. Housing, jobs, education, obviously, what we've seen in the last year or so on criminal justice issues. The struggle is a marathon, not a sprint. And while we were able to make headway in Little Rock, some of the systemic issues that underlie American race relations are still there. The biggest problem being housing segregation. And I think that one of the reasons that I'm here and speaking to MSU students is that I think students have an opportunity to try and break through those barriers. It's important that we see that while we have resegregation of schools and neighborhoods, that this problem is only going to be solved if we get a real commitment from the average citizen that racial discrimination is a kind of plague on this country that we don't need, and we got to figure out everybody has a role to play in trying to eliminate it.
Many people see the Black Lives Matter movement happening today as a revival of the activism of the civil rights movement. Do you see this current movement having the same kind of impact as the civil rights activism of the mid-century, mid-20th century?
Well, I think activism is a healthy occurrence. I think you don't get change simply by asking for it. You have to use your civic duties to promote it and push it. And Black Lives Matter, the other activities that are going on are very important in trying to continue that. So yes, the answer is I'm an advocate for continuous pushing and prodding. The right to vote, which is something that the civil rights movement spent a great deal of time and energy on. We have to spend time now encouraging the average citizen to use that right to vote and to participate in the political process.
You and the other members of the Little Rock Nine had a huge impact on the civil rights movement. When you look back at the moment, how did it shape you personally? And what do you think was the biggest lesson you walked away with after you graduated from Central?
Well, I think the range of contacts and relations, obviously an outgrowth from my Little Rock Central High School experience. I think that what I walk away from is that change will occur when you speak up and speak out and play an active role in trying to change things around you. Hopefully, talking to students here, I want to have them continue to be activists, play an important role in change, and we don't have a better country, a world, unless we're willing to put our shoulder to the plow and do our role and participate. And participation is probably the one thing that I learned from my Central High experience.
Are you in touch with any of the other Little Rock Nine?
We are in touch with each other. The world of the internet allows you to stay connected, and we get together periodically receiving recognition and awards, and we were just last year honored by the Abraham Lincoln Library. We received their annual award, the nine of us. So one of the nine has passed on, so there are eight of us still around. We're close to one another.
You're the father of three children. I'm wondering what you feel when you think about the world that they inhabit today compared to the world that you grew up in.
Well, I think it's obviously a changed world. It's not perfect. There's a lot that's still wrong, you know, environmental issues like Flint water, something that has to be changed, and that's probably Flint's not the only community that the environmental issues are more heavily resting on minority communities, the African-American community. When I talk to my kids, who are now all adults, I have a son who's a historian at the University of Chicago, a daughter who's making documentary films, another daughter who's working on an MBA at Columbia. I tell them that they've got to use their abilities to reach a broader audience, try to impact somebody new. Don't get hidebound and get captured by those who are closest around you, but have the ability to reach out. And I'm proud that each of them have taken that to heart and have made it work for them.
Ernest Green is an MSU alum and one of the Little Rock Nine, the first African-American students to attend Little Rock Central High School in Arkansas. Ernest, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
It's always good to be back at Michigan State. Go green, go white.